Turn in our Bibles to Matthew chapter 5. We'll finish up today on the sermon on the Beatitudes that we've been studying. Hope this hasn't become tedious to you, but it's helped us as we've studied together. You're looking at a happy grandfather this morning. My two grandsons and I, my three grandsons and I, are all preaching on the same day. That is, we're scheduled to all preach, and I think that may be a first, but it's not every grandfather that can say, "Oh, my grandchildren and I are preaching today." So I'm happy about that, and I know you join me in my rejoicing about that. Good to be with you this morning, and hope that our worship together, study together, will be helpful to all of us. Look at verse 9. Of Matthew chapter 5, and let me suggest that you put a marker there, and we'll be coming back to the Sermon on the Mount. Verse 9, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." Blessed are the peacemakers. We've been pointing out that all of these go along with those first four Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. The poor in spirit are people who know they are in sin and know that they're spiritually bankrupt, they have nothing to offer. And as a result, they're mourning over their sin. They're meek before God. They'll do anything God asks. And they're hungering and thirsting for righteousness. Righteousness that can only come because God forgives us. He's made peace with us because of his mercy and grace. And just think what it's cost him to make peace with us. It cost our Lord his blood. Well, you know, if God was willing to do that to make peace with us, surely we should be willing to make sacrifices in order to make peace with others. So blessed are the peacemakers. Let's talk about some things this morning that help us to make peace with others. First of all, if I want to be a peacemaker, I need to be willing to give way sometimes to the thinking of other people. Now, I'm not talking about things pertaining to eternal salvation. We're to contend earnestly for the faith which was once delivered to the saints, Jude verse 3. So we don't compromise on things that pertain to salvation. But there are a lot of things that fall under the realm of judgment. How we're to do this or that, or what we're to do, or whatever. And I must not think that my thinking is always right, that I've got to have my way in everything that comes up. What do we say? My way or the highway? That's what we say. No, that's not the spirit that we're supposed to have. We must recognize sometimes my thinking may be wrong and give way to the opinions and thinking of other people. Turn with me to James chapter 3. Start with verse 13. See if these verses don't say exactly what I'm saying, that we are to be the kind of people who give way to others. Verse 13, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil work are there." But look at now verse 17. "But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Can you imagine a church having very many problems if everybody has that kind of spirit about them? And I would think of Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4. Do nothing through faction or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind. Let others esteem others better than themselves. Don't look out just for your own interest. Look out for the interest of others. Be willing to give, to yield. I'm turning to 3 John. In 3 John, we read of a man who had to have his own way. Now, 3 John is written to a man named Gaius. And there were people who were traveling, coming through Gaius' hometown, and they were going to preach to the Gentiles. And Gaius is being encouraged, open your home to these people. Send them on their way. Give hospitality to them. But now look at what he said in verse 9. I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does, prating against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. You're either going to do it my way, or I'm going to put you out of the church. That's the kind of spirit we're not talking about. That's the kind of spirit that's the opposite of what we're preaching this morning. Now, in contrast to that, I once heard of a man, and he's sitting in a business meeting. The churches you are did not have elders. A suggestion was made, let's cut the tree down out in the front of the building. The man spoke up and said, I don't want to cut that tree down. My grandfather planted that tree. That tree means a lot to me, but various reasons were given for cutting down the tree. And the decision was made, we're going to cut down the tree and we'll meet next Saturday morning and cut the tree at 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock, there was the man there. He had his chainsaw. Somebody said, I thought you didn't want to cut down this tree. He said, I didn't. But we made a decision to cut the tree. And when we make a decision, I'm going to be in there and helping to carry out that decision. Do you see the opposite attitude? Who's the peacemaker? Is it Diotrephes? No, hardly. It's that person who's willing to yield, to give way to the thinking of other people. In the 16 and a half years that I've been at Hartsel, it's hard for me to believe I've been there that long. I've made all kinds of suggestions to the elders, good suggestions, outstanding suggestions. Of course they were mine. We all think our suggestions are good, don't we? And some of them I thought they apparently thought were good suggestions and they carried them out. Some of them, I don't know why they didn't think they were good suggestions, but apparently they didn't. What should I do? Demand. Why don't you do it my way? Maybe go around and get a few people on my side. Don't you think this would be a good thing? And then come and try to force the elders to do it. Or should I say, you know, maybe they're right. Maybe my thinking isn't all that great. What should I do? What should I do if I want to be a peacemaker in the Westview Church? Turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Look at verses 12 and 13. And we urge you, brethren, to recognize those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. Who's that talking about? Surely it's talking about the elders. Now look at the next phrase. Be at peace among yourselves. By giving way, it helps us to make peace. All right. So blessed are the peacemakers. What can we do in order to make peace? We can give way to the thinking of other people in matters of judgment. Second, if I want to make peace with people, leave vengeance to God. Turn to Romans chapter 12. I'm starting with verse 17. Romans 12, verse 17. Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Don't seek to avenge yourself. I feel sorry for the person who's always trying to get even with somebody. Somebody does me wrong. What's my inclination? Get him back. Or when I get him back, what's he going to do? Get me back. How do you say this? And there it goes back and forth. You can't get even with somebody. And instead of lying in bed and trying to think about how you can get somebody back, why not get out of bed, pray for him, get in bed and go to sleep, and let God take care of the vengeance and getting even with somebody. You can't get even with people. Leave vengeance to God. And doesn't the Sermon on the Mount teach us that? Let's go back to Matthew chapter 5. I hope by now that you're seeing that to a great degree the Sermon on the Mount is an enlargement of the Beatitudes. Practically every Beatitude, I guess every one we've come to, we've gone to the Sermon on the Mount because it's somewhat of an enlargement. And I'd like for us to be able to see that. All right, Matthew chapter 5. How are we to treat those who do us wrong and are our enemies? Look, starting with verse 38. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Let me pause to talk about that just a minute. Does the Bible talk about an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth? Yes. The Old Testament taught eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But it taught that as a means of sentencing, not personal retaliation. If somebody plucks out an eye, then what's he to pay for? He's to pay for it with his eye. Suppose he takes a life, what's he to pay for it? He's to pay for his own life. That's the way sentences were to be rendered out in the courts of the people. They would meet in the gates and trials would take place. But by this time, it seems that the scribes and Pharisees had taken that expression and made it personal retaliation. You knock out one of my eyes, I'll give one of yours. You knock out one of my teeth, I'll give one of yours. That's not what the law was teaching at all. Let me pause to say, observe the expression, you have heard that it was said. Jesus didn't say it was said. He said, you have heard that it was said. Who would they have heard it from? Mostly the scribes and Pharisees. So what were they saying? Eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Personal retaliation. The law didn't teach that. But that's what they were hearing that was said. All right, let's carry on from there. 43. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. Let's go on up to verse 38. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. I confess to you, I'm not sure how to apply that. Am I just to let anybody and everybody run over me and take away my house? Well, okay, here's my house. Well, take my car too. Surely Jesus is not saying that. But I tell you what I know he is saying. He is saying, don't be the kind of person who has to stand up for his rights. Nobody's going to run over me. I'm going to stand up for my rights. Don't be that kind of person. That's the kind of person that's in trouble with other people all the time. So while I may not always let somebody run over me, at the same time, I don't rise up about every slight that comes my way and make a mountain out of a molehill. That's not what I'm to do either. We've got a brother in Westview, Reggie Corum. He said, his expression was, we just have to get over it. And there are times when we just need to get over it. Somebody does something wrong to us, slaps us on the cheek, as it were. We just need to get over it and not make a big issue out of everything that comes along. Don't think you've got to get even with people who have done you wrong. All right, look at the next verses. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. And pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Those are hard to do, and I confess that they're hard to do. But don't seek vengeance for yourself. Don't think you've got to get even with everybody. You'll never be a peacemaker if that's your attitude. Old Testament Joseph. Turn to Genesis chapter 50. You remember Joseph's brothers sold him into slavery. Potiphar's wife lied about him, ended up in prison, but ended up being second in all of Egypt. And here come his brothers seeking for food. Ah, he can get even with them, can't he? They did him wrong, and Joseph doesn't do that. He's kind to them. Arranges for them to come down, live in the land of Goshen. But then Jacob dies. The father dies. And the brothers get to thinking, uh-oh, he was good to us as long as Dad lived. But Dad's dead. No doubt he will come with vengeance now. So look at verse 15 of Genesis 50. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil which we did to him. So they sent messengers to Joseph, saying, before your father died, he commanded, saying, thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespasses of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, behold, we're your servants. Joseph said to them, do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? What a beautiful question. To whom does vengeance belong? God. Am I in the place of God that I would seek vengeance on you? I wonder how Joseph knew that. I know how we know it. We read it a few moments ago in Romans chapter 12. I know how we know it. How did Joseph know it? I don't know. But he knew. Leave vengeance to God. And he was able to maintain peace with his brothers. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 2. Jesus knew it. First Peter chapter 2, start with verse 21. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving for us an example that you should follow his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. Now look at verse 23. Who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. Wouldn't you be disappointed if when they came up to him and he's on the cross and they say, he saved others, himself he cannot save. Let him come down from the cross. We'll believe in him. He trusted in God. Let him deliver him. And Jesus hurls back an insult at them. Wouldn't that disappoint you somewhat? And you know, with one lash of his tongue, he could have cut those people right down. He didn't do it. When they threatened him, he did not threaten back in return. Somebody said, I don't know how he kept from it. Well, the verse tells us. Verse 22, he committed himself to him who judges righteously. He just turned it over to God. He let God handle it. Now look at chapter 4 of 1 Peter and verse 19. Therefore let those who suffer according to the will of God commit their souls to him in doing good as a faithful creator. What did Jesus do when he was threatened, when people did him wrong? He turned it over to God. What should we do when people hurt us? Turn it over to God. We don't have to get vengeance. God will take care of that. Live peaceably with your fellow man. Isn't that what we're talking about? Be willing to give way. Don't think you've got to get even with people. Turn it over to God. Now let me give you a third thing. And that is, try to find reconciliation with those with whom you may be estranged at the present time. I wonder if in a group this size, we may not be all that large, but in a group this size, I wonder if there's not some of us who know somebody out there and we've fallen out with them. They've fallen out with us. We've had nothing to do with them. We hope we never see them again. You know, it might be a good thing to go and see if you can correct all that. Back to Matthew chapter 5. Start with verse 23. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar, and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. And in today's circumstances, you've come to worship, but you remember, I did my brother wrong. Instead of trying to worship, you need to go to him first and say, I did you wrong. I know I did you wrong. I'm sorry. will you forgive me? Now, if he won't forgive you, if he won't be reconciled to you, then you've done all that you can do. But if I've wronged somebody, instead of letting that burden my conscience, I need to go to him, make it correct, tell him I'm sorry. But what if that person has done wrong to me? I have not done him wrong, but he's done wrong to me. Turn to Matthew 18. Start with verse 21. Oh, let's start with verse 15. That's where we need to start. More of your brother sins against you. Go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. Then it tells what further to do. But that's not our point this morning. Your brother has sinned against you. Go tell him his fault. See if you can bring him to repentance. All right, do you see the picture? Let's picture it this way. I've done my brother wrong. I need to go to him and tell him, I'm sorry, I did you wrong. Will you forgive me? But here's a brother over here, and he's done me wrong. What's he supposed to do? I'm supposed to go to him and say, you've done me wrong. So whether it's me doing the brother wrong or the brother doing me wrong, either way, I'm to go to that brother, see if I can correct it with him. Finding peace with those that you are presently alienated from. That's not easy. And I know it's not easy. I think pride gets in our way. Probably all of us have experienced this. A difference rises between two people in the same church. What happened when I'm leaves? And we just forget it all. Don't make any effort to be reconciled to them at all. But that difference is still there. And he's my brother, my sister. Go and see if you can work out reconciliation with them. I'm going to use a personal experience along that line. I lived in a place years ago, had a difference with a brother, and I left. I was moving away anyway at the time. I was already had my plans made to move. I moved. That difference was still there. I went back for a meeting. I went to the brother's house. I said, I haven't felt good about you. He said, no, and I haven't felt good about you. He started trying to bring up all the past, and fortunately, I could not remember all of it. And I told him, I don't remember. But I said, the only thing I know is my attitude hadn't been right toward you, and you're telling me your attitude's not been right to me. Why don't we just forgive one another and write out a note that both of us can agree to, and I'll read it before the assembly tonight. He said, that'll be fine. But he said, I got a lot of things to straighten up. I've fallen away. I'm not serving the Lord at all. I wrote out a statement. He agreed to the statement. I read it that night. Sometime later, he came back to the Lord. The next time I was in town, I asked about him. They said, you've never heard? No. He died. The last time I saw him was when I was sitting in his living room that day, making things right with him. I sure was glad I did it. It may be that his soul was saved because we made it right with one another. Don't let those things just keep lingering out there. If you can't do it, if it's an impossibility, Sometimes it is. Sometimes a person just won't receive you. But if at least make an attempt to correct the problems that exist between you and other people. Look at what God went through to make peace with us. Will I not go through some things to make peace with my fellow man? All right, I got one more thing. Don't have time to get into it. But do you remember what it said? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called. If we were in a Bible class, I'd get you to answer. They shall be called children of God or sons of God. That's not how we become sons of God. Well, why would it be said, you shall be called sons of God? Because children take on a likeness of their parents, don't they? Do we know Billy Randolph preaches at 4th Street? And he has a son named Ty. I don't know whether you know Ty or not, but Ty's just like his dad. And someday, one day, somebody comes up to me and says, let me introduce you to this young man. His name is Ty Randolph. He's Billy's son. Well, okay, he's Billy's son. But then I spend about 3 or 4 hours with him, and I say, he sure is the son of Billy Randolph. What do I mean by that? He shows all the characteristics of Billy Randolph, and he does, incidentally. When we're children of God, we show the characteristics of God. And when I'm willing to give way, when I'm willing to make some sacrifices in order to be at peace with my fellow man, I'm showing myself to have the characteristics of my Father, who is God. Blessed are the peacemakers. They shall be called sons of God. May all of us be willing to make whatever sacrifices are needful to be at peace with our fellow man. All right, Jan, if you're ready to lead the invitation song, maybe there's somebody that needs to respond this morning. If so, we stand and sing.